Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters and Tom Claxton, both veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we welcome you to the most important and entertaining show on the radio each week as we tackle the issues and concerns vital to the welfare of our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran, and we have got an outstanding show coming up for you tonight. But first, we want to thank some of the sponsors that helped make the show possible. Right, Tom?
We certainly do. We'd like to thank the Battleship, USS Alabama Memorial Park, Viva Medicare of Alabama, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, Ed's Seafood Sid, the official sponsor of Tom's Tirade, and Patriot Roofing and Serenity Funeral Homes and Gardens.
It's Patriot Roofing and Serenity. Patriot Roofing Patriot is not with
roofing.
Serenity.
And Serenity it's
that,
Funeral
that
Home.
English comma. You got to get it in there.
Hey, look, anyway. But that's Southern.
Oh, boy. Anyway, I want to thank all of our sponsors. And, of course, you are great listeners. We could not do this without your support, Southern or not. So please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt.
Don't knock Southern now.
There you go. Remember, the show is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them. So you can always join in the discussion at 343-0106 or 866-983-2777. You can also check us out on the TuneIn app for your smartphone at FM Talk 106.5. And if you like to listen on demand, our podcast for our regularly aired shows are up on most of the major podcast sites. Just search Scuttlebutt or SBN. And if you like to get your blood pressure going, you can listen to Tom's Tirade via podcast on demand at castbox.com. And you can always subscribe and you'll get notifications when there are updates to those sites.
Don't turn the volume up loud because the police come home, you know, show up.
And you can check us out on Facebook, like us there. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And we've got a lot of information to cover tonight, packed show. So if we can't get to everything or you like more information on any of the topics that we cover, you can always check out the stack at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. And later on SBN, we'll be joined by Captain Heather Lose from the Mobile Civil Air Patrol Squadron. She's also joined by their public affairs officer, Anna Guerra. See, I got it, Tom.
And that's Guerrera. Southern is Guerrera.
All right. Anyway, but they're going to share their story as well as information on an upcoming recruitment event. They're one of our best kept secrets in our military society. Also, Secretary of Defense Mad Dog Mattis comments on the anniversary of 9/11. While Nike wades into the Colin Kaepernick trap with a new Just Do It campaign, we'll talk about it. Also, six veterans walking together to save lives, we'll give you the details. And a 105-year-old Navy veteran finally gets his college diploma. Hey, Tom, there's still luck.
There's still room for me, baby. Yeah.
And later on, Tom's tirade on Black Hawk Down to Benghazi. It's a good one you don't want to miss. But first, the VA was formed with a mission to care for those that have borne the battle, and many think that the VA is there to take care of the wounds that veterans incur while in service. But a new push for expanded care from lawmakers and activists may highlight mission creep at the agency, some critics say. And Dom, this is a story we've talked about back and forth over the last few years. And the story off military.com is you have lawmakers urging the VA secretary to offer gender reassignment surgery to veterans. And it goes on to say that the transgender veterans can currently get treatment at the VA before and after gender reassignment surgery, but by department policy, they can't get the surgery itself. And there was
Well, now, Cal, did they do that for a while, though?
They did. There was a brief period of time where they removed the restriction, and that was 2016 when then Defense Secretary Ash Carter lifted that ban.
Right,
and they moved on to say that the VA could do that. That has since been rolled back, and you have sort of this split within, I think, the military community and the veterans community, and then some of the medical and psychiatric communities that are saying, well, this is a surgery that's necessary for these veterans. And then you have those saying, well, you know, those thinking that the VA is there to treat, let's say you get your leg blown off, and that's the VA is there to take care of that, because that's something that you incurred while you were in service.
And most occasions it's combat wounded.
Well, yeah, and in a lot of instances. Now, with the way the discharge system is now, you know, they check you from, you know, just head to toe. And if you had a back, you know, back injury that may not have been combat related, but, you know, you did injure your back while you were in service and it still gives you problems, then they'll put that on your medical paperwork as you get out. And maybe the VA will pick up on that. But, you know, you have a generation of veterans that when they got out of service, all they wanted to do was get out. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't necessarily want to have everything that was wrong with them documented by the doctor.
They were on my page.
Yeah. Yeah. You just wanted, you wanted to get out, go on with your life.
Right.
And now, of course, they check every box. You know, if you've got that trick knee that suddenly started bothering you, or if it's been aggravated while it was in military service, it's going to show up. You may very well get a disability rating for it and get benefits for it. But I think there is a segment of the population that thinks that the VA is there to take care of those injuries that were incurred while you were in service. And so when this comes out, they start scratching their heads going, wait a minute, why is the VA doing this? Because obviously this is not something that occurred because you were in the military.
No. But Cal, they were spending $1 million on these operations and all of the medicines and all of the care, and they were losing that veteran for at least a year by the time they went through all the operations and all of the stuff that went along with it afterwards, and then all of the different medicines that they had to take afterwards, whether it be testosterone or the other. You know, so
he's showing his medical prowess. Now.
Well, you know, hey, you know, if the lady wants to be a man, then she's got to take the testosterone. You know, what can I say?
But anyway, there's an interesting discussion, and it's come up again because there was a lawsuit that was filed by a group, Transgender American Veterans Association, that filed a lawsuit against the VA saying that the surgeries are medically necessary in some cases.
That's right. I don't have a problem with that. Let them get it on the outside.
And, well, there again, if the VA has become not just a provider for the things that occurred while you were in service, if it is basically a veterans-only health care, then they're going to go, wait a minute, I've got to be able to go to my health care provider to get this. Mm-hmm. So they filed a lawsuit, and there had been in 2017, because there was a petition that was filed in 2016 that apparently was going nowhere at the VA. And so the comment period on this topic at the VA ended September 7th. And 82 House Democrats and one Republican joined in a letter to VA Secretary Wilkie, urging him to end the ban. And so that's where this has come back up again. And it'll be interesting to see what happens at the VA. I don't know that there is anything that they have to do, the VA necessarily has to do with this. They could very well just let it be a pocket veto and kind of let it die on the vine. But there is still the lawsuit that is out there. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. Obviously, there's a lot of there are dollars involved yes. with anything like this. And the VA, with the tremendous amount of funding that it already gets, claiming that it doesn't have the funding that it needs to take care of the veterans that are already there, you know, there's always the dollars and cents to it. So it'll be interesting to see at least how the debate, if there is a debate, how it progresses and what the ultimate outcome is. But as always, you can visit scuttlebuttnetwork.com, visit the stack there for more information. On the other side of the break, Captain Heather Loos from the Mobile Civil Air Patrol Squadron, along with Anna Guerra, when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Our country's battles in the air, on land and sea.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
Yeah, Tom. Welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777. Hey, you can also catch us on the TuneIn app for your smartphone. Check us out on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And it is a privilege to be joined in the Scuttlebutt seat this evening by Captain Heather Loos and Public Affairs Officer Anna Guerra from the Mobile Civil Air Patrol Squadron. Captain, welcome to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Thank you very much.
Well, the Civil Air Patrol, I know what it is. I happened to actually visit it when I was a teenager, and there were some conflicts in scheduling I wasn't able to join. But it's great to know that the Civil Air Patrol is still active and is out there. But many of our listeners may not know what the Civil Air Patrol is. So let's start with that.
Well, the Civil Air Patrol is the United States Air Force's official auxiliary. We are a nonprofit benevolent society, so we don't actually go to war. We do wear a uniform. We actually have several different uniforms depending on what we're doing. We've got flight suits for the flyers. We've got what we're wearing tonight, our service blues. We've got a utility uniform, all types of uniforms because we have so many different things that we do. But it's over 75 years. We got our start back in the 1930s, back after World War I, when some of the aviators saw World War II coming, and they decided that they needed to get the civilian aviation community involved in national defense. So that's how we got started.
Outstanding. Insofar as the squadron that's here, tell us a little bit about what it is that or how many members you have, what it is that you do with the Civil Air Patrol.
Well, we actually have quite a few senior members, but a lot of them are becoming inactive as they get older in age. So for active members, I would say we probably have about 12 to 15 people show up on a regular basis.
Now, you said senior members. What does that mean?
Senior members or anybody actually.
Because Tom is a senior member,
yes.
And he's known as a senior.
Senior.
Yeah. That kind of confuses people because senior member actually isn't that old. Anybody that's 21 or older is a senior member. If you join the military, so I actually have a son that's about to join the military, and he's only 18. So once he joins the military, he's no longer allowed to be a cadet. He becomes a senior member. So senior member is anybody that's in the military or 21 and older.
Now, when you say in the military, does that include the reserves?
It does.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So so you have the senior members, cadet.
Cadet is anyone that's 12 years to 20.
Okay.
So unless they join the military.
So they joined the military. Okay. And Anna, I know that you are a cadet. You're the public affairs officer.
I am.
So how did you decide to join, and what is it that you do as a cadet?
Well, we decided to join about 2 years ago when my mom was looking for an ROTC program for my older brother because he wants to join the military. And I was 12 years old at that time. I was the shyest kid, hid behind mom, didn't want to say hi, didn't even want to go to the restaurant to ask for ketchup. So I kind of was a little hesitant to joining, but my dad told me, you know, check this out. If you don't like it, you don't have to renew after a year. But I ended up loving it. I mean, here I am 2 years later. I've opened up. I mean, I'm talking right now.
Absolutely. So, doing a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that you'd already be the public relations officer.
No, sir. I would have never imagined myself doing anything
right.
like this.
Well, you do an awesome job.
Great. Captain, what are the activities, what are the missions of the Civil Air Patrol if somebody doesn't know what you do?
Well, we've actually got several missions. So one of our missions is emergency services. It's one of the most important things that we do. Having reflected back on 9/11 just recently, it was a Civil Air Patrol member that actually sent out the flash message to get people in federal and state departments to get to the right communications that they could actually get messages relayed from the president on how our response was going to be. So we play a very important role that people just, they don't even know that we're a part of that. We were the first civilian planes in the air after the towers collapsed to do reconnaissance missions so that we could take photographs of what had gone on. That's obviously a huge disaster that's on our mind right recently, since we're just right past 9/11, mm-hmm. Reflecting on that. But, you know, with the hurricanes coming up, we've already had messages going out to all of our local squadrons, getting volunteers who are willing to deploy once the hurricane comes ashore, so that we can already know who's available, who's willing, who's trained. We have a very robust educational program so that we can get people their professional development and get them specialized in whatever fields they're interested in. So if they're mission qualified and they're available, we put them on a list. And so when something like a hurricane happens or wildfires in California, whatever the case may be, once we know what the need is, we come in and we fill that need. After 9/11, we mobilized over 8,700 members to help fill federal and state emergency response centers, because we know how to set up an incident command center and to run it and to do the communications and the organizations to get out there what we need, find out what the need is and get it out there.
And so is it, it's not, not everybody has to be a pilot?
No.
Or want to fly?
True. That's one of the things, because aviation is another big, you know, aerospace is one of our big missions, is aerospace education. And everybody thinks, oh, Civil Air Patrol, you know, you got to be a pilot. Mm-hmm. We have so many people that want to keep their feet on the ground. We have so many different roles. We have admin roles where, you know, if you like finance, to run the squadron, we need a finance officer. If you like computers, we need an IT person right now, because they keep calling me IT and I'm not IT. I can just barely kind of do the website up. Visit the website, but I have to apologize. That's a person that has no clue what they're doing. That would be me.
So you're on my page.
Exactly. So I'm doing the best that I can in that role right now. But, I mean, cadet programs is our third thing that we do. And to run a successful cadet program, we need people who can teach aerospace. We need people that can teach character development. Somehow or another, I got recruited to be the fitness education officer as well.
PT.
So, yes. So I'm...
Loads of fun.
Okay. And I told him, I said, you know, I actually just, you know, sat down with him. I said, look, how many of you, you know, because we're not really a recruiting... That's the other thing people kind of say, you know, you either have to be a pilot or you're recruiting for the military. We aren't really a recruiting tool for the military, but a lot of the cadets find that they enjoy the atmosphere, the leadership and the things that the military has to offer. So it ends up being recruiting, because that's what they enjoy out of the program. But developing the PT program, that's what I asked them. You know, how many of you are actually planning on at least investigating going into the military? And every single one of them raised their hands. And I said, you know, it doesn't mean you have to go, but if I'm going to run your PT program, I'm going to run it like you're getting ready for boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
And So that's,
and that's
how
what
I
they
run.
Needed. That's what they
absolutely,
needed.
Absolutely.
So Anna, is she telling the truth about?
She is. She definitely is. She has a great job, actually. I feel like our last PT officer did a good job, but I think she's doing outstanding. She's doing everything that she can in her power to get us ready for the military in the physical training area.
Great. Now, let me ask you this, and that really is important, because when you look at the statistics in the general population, the number of candidates that are of age to join the military, but they can't qualify physically from the physical fitness side of it. Is this an alternative to a standard ROTC program?
It can be an alternative, but we actually have ROTC cadets that come into Civil Air Patrol, and I believe it's if they have 1 year.
Well, that's Air Force ROTC.
Okay, so if they have Air Force ROTC, then they actually can accelerate their promotions within Civil Air Patrol based on the fact that they're actually getting double in character development, leadership, aerospace. So they can actually speed up their promotions. Right now, for somebody that's just in Civil Air Patrol without the requisite ROTC, they can only promote every 56 days.
Okay.
So,
but for somebody that may be homeschooled, like you are looking at some sort of program like that, that could be a viable alternative.
It can.
Great.
It actually fills a great role with that. Homeschool students really enjoy that they have something to come to that's on a regular basis. We do STEM, so the science, technology, engineering, mathematics. We have an award-winning program with STEM. They just shot off rockets that they built the end of August.
Yes.
We had a Saturday event that we did that as well. So we do a lot of things that, you know, they don't get in the ROTC program, but there's some of that leadership stuff and the drill, and you know, she's part of the color guard and the honor guard, so there's some of that stuff that kind of overlaps. And so the ROTC cadets that come in actually strengthen that for us.
Okay. So, yeah, so they can kind of add to what's already going on there with the Civil Air Patrol. So that's a unique take on it. Again, we are talking with Captain Heather Los and Anna Guerra from the Mobile Civil Air Patrol Squadron. We're coming up on a break, and we'll talk with you more on the other side of the break about some of your upcoming events. But where can people go for more information?
If they want to find out more information, they can go to that wonderful website that I'm trying to do my best at. It's mobilealcap.org. So very easy to remember.
Facebook?
Facebook is Mobile CAP.
Great. All right. And so there's contact information in both places.
Absolutely.
In terms of where, who to contact, where to go, and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Wonderful. Great. Again, we are talking with Captain Heather Los and Anna Guerra from the Mobile Civil Air Patrol Squadron. We will talk more with them on the other side of the break. As always, you can always go to scuttlebuttnetwork.com for more information. But we'll have that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Hit a lick against what's wrong, or say a word for what's right, even though you get walloped for saying that word. Now, I may sound like a Bible beater yelling up a revival at a river crossing camp meeting, but that don't change the truth none. There's right and there's wrong. You gotta do one or the other. You do the one and you're living. You do the other and you may be walking around, but you're dead as a beaver hat.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us tonight on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans, on 106.5 FM, firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. I'm Cal Walters here with Tom Claxton, and we're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion again. If you want to listen on demand, you can always catch our regularly aired programs on most of the major podcast sites. Just search Scuttlebutt Network or SBN, and you can pull them up there. And Tom's Tirade is available via podcast on CastBox. You can also check us out on Facebook, and you can follow me on Twitter at @Cal_SBN.
And we certainly want to thank the folks that continue to help make this show possible. The battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, our sea lawyer Colin Kimmerly at the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, Viva Medicare of Alabama, Patriot Roofing and Construction, and Serenity Funeral Homes and Gardens.
Absolutely. And again, we're honored tonight to be joined by Captain Heather Lose and Master Sergeant Anna Guerra from the Mobile Civil Air Patrol Squadron. Thank you both for being here with us.
Thank you very
much. And Captain, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
What probably you have listeners out there that may be wondering, do you have to have any particular skills or training to join the Civil Air Patrol? We mentioned that not everybody's a pilot, but do you have to come in with a skill set?
You actually don't, because we have such a robust educational process and professional development, both on the cadet side and for the senior members. You come in, you tell us what your interests are, we try to match you with a career field or a specialty area, and we have online training that you can do at your own pace. We have mentorship in the squadron, we have professional development weekends, and we have training with the state and with the region, so you can actually get out and practice what you're learning and become mission qualified if you decide to go that route. But yeah, like I said, there's such a variety of things that you can do that pretty much any interest, we can find you something.
Now, you mentioned training, and you mentioned weekends, but how often do you meet, and when is that?
We meet every Monday at 6:30 down at Signature Flight Support at Brookley Field. And for the cadets, we meet one weekend a month, which is scheduled based on whether we're doing a tour. Sometimes we go over to Keesler and we work with Keesler on, like, we went and did honor guard training there. We've toured air traffic control, security forces. So we actually try to give the cadets tours and get them to in front of people that have specialties that they might be interested in. So based on what we're planning for Saturday, it'll depend on what Saturday of the month that we do that, but every Monday night, 6:30.
And PT first?
That's the second Monday of the month.
Oh, okay. Oh, we didn't have that luxury, Tom. You got up in the morning and you did PT for the morning.
That's something that I actually started with daylight. The cadets as well. So cadets, if you're listening, Monday I will be checking your sign-off sheets. They're supposed to be doing physical therapy for me, or physical training for me. 6 days a week. 6 days a week they're supposed to be doing something for me to prepare, because I do only get 10 minutes every meeting and one meeting that's all mine. And that's not enough to get them where they need to be. Mm-hmm. So we have a home program that we have them working with.
Great. Great. Well, I mean, it's encouraging. And I guess they don't fudge. They do it. Or do
well,
we make
this,
them,
this
you know,
is what
run
I told
laps,
them.
Do push-ups?
It does no benefit to fudge, because I'm also running their physical training tests. Mm-hmm. So if you're not excelling and you're not improving, and I look at your sheet and you're doing everything that you're supposed to be doing, then you either have a medical condition that we need to address, or you're fudging. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they know not to fudge.
There you go. See, we always had we had these fun things at Paris Island called the pit, which was just a big sandbox, and you didn't want to end up in the pit. I mean, you were going to end up in the pit anyway. Somebody was going to do something, whether they did it or not.
Right.
But you were going to end up in the pit, and you got to play around in the pit. It was lots of fun. The sand got in your uniform and everywhere else. And
if it was all right, if you was by yourself, but it was when that other dude was in there with you.
Yeah, the drill instructor. Yeah, normally the drill instructor was not in there with you, and normally they take the one that had caused you to get in the pit, and then they got to stand outside and watch.
So,
yeah, you are always motivated to say hi to that guy afterwards.
Yes. Yep.
But anyway, you mentioned or in some of the information that you sent, you said that in Pell City you got volunteers participating in a search and rescue training event.
We actually do. That's part of the on the hand. hands training that we give. We have what we call SARXs, which is just short for search and rescue exercise or search and rescue training. We actually have 60 people, 60 volunteers that are coming from all over the state of Alabama to Pell City this weekend to train. But we have our eyes on the hurricane. So if we need to change training into real world mission, that will come down from actually the United States Air Force. We will be tasked with that mission from the actual U.S. Air Force.
And so what would that mission encompass?
It depends on what the need is. Like I said, a lot of times we are brought in to fill where the local or federal area needs assistance. So if they have a command center and they don't have staffing for all the positions, there are a number of different positions that fill a command center. There's a lot of things that go behind the scenes besides just the people that end up out in the field. So we have people that are trained up and ready to fill those positions. We have ground teams that can do search and rescue. We have pilots, actually, yes. Master Sergeant Guerra is one of our ground team members. That's what this badge is right here that she earned.
It's GTM-1. I actually went to a school that we call WES, Wing Emergency Services School, and it's 1 week in a month from January to May on training. And so I had gone this past year, my second time, so I'm GTM-1, and basically I learned how, furthermore, to use the maps, and our ground team leader, the adult, I'm basically their right-hand man, their helper. So if they are doing a task, I am their helper, and whatever they need to do, or I fill out paperwork, and I write down everyone that's on the mission, and basically everything that they need me to do.
So do they still teach land nav, or is everything just GPS now?
No.
Yeah, they still teach land nav because in a case where we wouldn't be able to use our GPS and we had no signal at all, we would have to be doing it on paper. So I actually learned how to do the latitude and longitude on a map, pinpoint where we are to like the tiniest little circle that we can make it to see where our most accurate point is. So if we didn't have a GPS, that would be where our knowledge would go in there.
Outstanding. Yeah, I remember land nav was always fun when they drop you in the swamps there in the dark. Yeah, and you know, just walking around, you had no idea what was in the swamp. You just knew where you had to get from point A to point B.
I cheated in ROTC. We got dropped off. We had several groups that were dropped off, and it was who could get back to the school the quickest. And everybody was fighting over the map and the compass, and I couldn't even get to it. And so finally, just climbed a tree, looked over, and went, "It's that way." And we beat everybody there.
There you go.
Hey, that sounds like the Marine.
There you go. Outstanding.
Improvise and overcome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you've got an event coming up this coming Monday.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
This is our recruiting open house. We actually have our cadets that are going to be doing all the presentations. So last Monday they put together presentation boards and talking points, and so they're tours. So you don't have to show up at 6:30, but we'll have tours that go anywhere from 6:30 to 8:45. And the cadets will actually have different stations that will tell you about emergency services, our fitness program, communications, our chaplain services, and all the things that they provide for we lost a plane. I think you might remember a Civil Air Patrol plane on the way back from a mission. And we lost two of both the pilot and the co-pilot in that. So our chaplain service would help with the cadets and the senior members that were dealing with that loss. They actually were part of the response for that plane. So
I actually remember that. My first orientation flight was with the pilot in that crash.
So we actually had to respond to our own plane crash at that point. But we have the chaplain services,
public affairs,
honor guard, and aviation. At the very back, you get to tour the airplane. And actually, my son, he's well on his way to his private pilot license, and he's going to be in the back telling you all about the aviation side of things. And then one of the seniors can take you out and tour the airplane if you're interested in doing that.
Outstanding. Now, what was there a cost to participate?
Well, there's a minimal cost to sign up. I believe it's like $30. It's very minimal to sign up. Probably the most expensive cost is the uniforms. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go out and run and grab everything at one time. We actually try to get some of the Air Force bases on either side of us to try to donate uniforms so that people that can't afford them, we can provide uniforms for them. So uniforms are probably the most expensive thing.
The most expensive one, I would say, is blues.
Yes.
But when you make your courier your first rank, you actually, Vanguard gives you a $100 voucher so you can purchase your blues and take, it wouldn't be so expensive because blues really is the most expensive uniform out of all of them.
So that's probably the most expensive cost is uniforms. And like I said, you don't have to run out and grab all of them at once, and it really depends on what you're going to be doing, which ones you really need. Cadets, though, they end up with all three of us. You know, PT uniform, their blue uniform. If they're going to participate in color guard or honor guard, they do have to have the service coat, and then the ABUs. Yep. So.
Is this a shortcut to the Air Force Academy?
It's not a shortcut to the Air Force Academy.
Does it help?
Yes,
it absolutely does help, because if you get your SPOTS award, which is the highest award that you can receive as a cadet, and you've crossed all your T's and you've dotted all of your I's pretty much that you're going to get into the Air Force. I can't guarantee it, but yep. If you get that far in your cadet,
you've got the doors open.
Proven leadership right. Skills that really do
that's
awesome. For you.
Outstanding. Well, Captain Alos and Master Sergeant Garrett, we appreciate you being here with us again. What's the website?
It's mobilealcap.org.
Wonderful. And the recruitment event is next Monday, 6:30.
Yes, right. Yeah, Brooklyn Field.
And so we appreciate everything that you do for us in the Civil Air Patrol. Thanks for joining us. Don't be a stranger. And let us know when you become the head of the Air Force.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Hey, on the other side of the break, Tom's tirade on Black Hawk down to Benghazi. A good one you don't want to miss. We'll have all that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
Recent headlines from Washington have had me thinking about events from this so-called dark continent, events which saw our brave warriors on the front lines of freedom left twisting in the winds of political change and partisan expediency. Headlines that have swirled around the threats of bloc nominations in the Senate over requests for additional information over the massacre in Benghazi. The confluence of the two have caused my thoughts to drift back to an eerie similar scenario, which occurred on the African continent nearly two decades ago. It was under the Clinton administration when our nation's warriors faced the specter of defeat at the hands of an unruly mob of fanatics, along with abandonment at the hands of an administration hell-bent on political expediency. For those of you who are too young to have seen it or too short-sighted to remember, the events of the Battle of Mogadishu were chronicled in the excellent book, Black Hawk Down, A Story of Modern War, and the graphically realistic movie, Black Hawk Down. Both very accurately portray the story of the events of October the 3rd and 4th, 1993, although they both conspicuously avoid any discussion of the decisions leading up to the conflict or the lack of decisive leadership from the White House during the course of the battle. The story revolves around Task Force Ranger, consisting primarily of U.S. Army Rangers from the 3rd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, Bravo Company, 1st Special Force Operational Detachment Delta, better known as Delta Force, and helicopters from 1st Battalion, 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. Although novices of the battlefield, this group was as highly trained and motivated as any of our armed forces that we fielded at that time. The Rangers were still the Army's elite, and Delta Force was the cutting edge of the Spec Ops community. Together, they were tasked with restoring peace in the war-torn country of Somalia, which had seen its president overthrown in 1991, and his country thrown into a clan violence leading to a collapse of civil society. The U.S. found itself in Somalia after pictures of starving, fly-infested children made their way into the international community, sparking a cry for desperately needed humanitarian assistance. Soon after began the first round of using the U.S. military as a global Meals on Wheels program in an effort to ensure that food and supplies from around the world were not confiscated by the Klan warlords, specifically Mohammed Farid Adid. Although the initial surge, which included elements of the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit, met success in restoring delivery of the relief supplies, the Somalis were unable to maintain order and did seize power, casting the UN and U.S. as occupiers rather than peacekeeping liberators. Does that sound familiar? In the ensuing escalation, Adid and his followers began a guerrilla war with the U.S. and UN, which ultimately led to Task Force Ranger finding themselves in the house-to-house urban warfare of October 3rd and 4th. With an operation to snatch two of Adid's lieutenants, which was supposed to last no more than 30 minutes, lasted nearly 2 days, resulting in 18 Americans dead, 80 wounded, and one captured. The Battle of Mogadishu highlighted the misuse of military power by feckless administration, both in the failure to understand the magnitude of the enemy, which resulted in an improperly deployed force structure as the U.S. was without its own heavy armor component. In a shameful display of failed leadership from the commander-in-chief, our Rangers had to fight their way out of Mogadishu, with many having to literally spring their last leg to reach a U.N. compound and what would become known as the Mogadishu Mile. The Clinton administration's subsequent decision to cut and run for Somalia rather than annihilate Adid and his followers led an obscure Islamic terrorist named Osama bin Laden to postulate that the U.S. would be defeated because his leaders did not have the stomach to fight. In 2001, he tested this theory with disastrous results. Although seen as a defeat, the Battle of Mogadishu was not without its heroes. Among them, Master Sergeant Gary Gordon and Sergeant First Class Randy Shugart, who selfishly sacrificed their lives by voluntarily inserting themselves into the crash site of a downed Black Hawk helicopter. In an eerie foreshadowing of events, nearly 20 years later on the African continent, both were killed in their efforts to defend their fellow Americans while waiting on help that would never come. Their corpses were among those shown throughout the world in the images of our soldiers' corpses being abused, burned, and dragged through the streets in the aftermath of the battle without recourse. Images that will make my blood boil and leave me saying a few choice words for the cigar aficionado in chief. I have much the same response to our current commander-in-chief on a number of grounds, none less than the massacre of Americans in Benghazi last September 11th, in which U.S. Ambassador Stevens was tortured and killed along with two Navy SEALs who volunteered to insert themselves into the consulate and were killed in their efforts to defend their fellow Americans while waiting on help that would never come. Does that sound similar? Many now believe that they were likely killed by our own damn weapons, which had been walked into Libya by the administration in support of the Islamic rebels. To date, there has been no retaliation for this act of war on the U.S. We, the American people, have yet to be told the truth of the events that day by anyone in this administration. I hope that few on Capitol Hill with the power to seek this will not give up in their quest. However, I think there is one truth that history will show. Our pivot to the Pacific and away from the Middle East and now Africa is unwarranted and dangerous. This administration's decision to cut and run from Afghanistan and Iraq and its subsequent support of uprising throughout the Middle East and Africa will only embolden the next generations of bin Ladens. Their insistence on sacrificing our military to pay for their welfare state will only serve to put our children and grandchildren at a disadvantage when facing future generations of tyranny determined to defeat the great Satan. One might think that the brutal murder of Ambassador Stevens would lead to an understanding that diplomacy just doesn't work in countries that know only mob rule, that unconditional surrender is sometimes necessary, and hey, it works. Unfortunately, our nation is sorely lacking in the leadership category in Washington these days, with politicians that are more concerned with growing their own damn power than doing what is right for this nation and its people. But that would take courage, and we seem to be led by a cult of cowardice. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton.
Where's your drill sergeant, men?
Hold up, sir!
Hold up, sir!
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
Boom-shaka-laka-laka, boom-shaka-laka-laka, boom-shaka-laka-laka.
Well, a good tirade there, Tom. And of course, there's a couple of comments in there in that tirade that were specific to the time frame in which it was created, which was in the aftermath of Benghazi. Right. And of course, the big attack on Benghazi happened on a subsequent 9/11. And we've recently, in the last couple of days, had former President Obama come out and say that again, comment about the fact that people didn't believe that that Benghazi was started by this mob,
right?
And that it's almost like you're denying the Holocaust if you believe something. And there was a truth behind Benghazi. We found out more and more about it. The men that fought for 13 hours and watched their comrades die next to them know about it.
And the comment that Hillary made, what difference does it make?
Well, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Just so you know, our Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis said of 9/11. He said that the U.S. has continued to show the world that Americans, quote, do not scare. And I think he and the leadership we have now are dramatically different than what we had in the aftermath of Benghazi.
That is so true. I was extremely impressed by that young lady who was on here a while ago.
Absolutely, Tom.
Master Sergeant, and she's tough as nails. I hope I live long enough to see that gold star. Or that silver star up on that,
there you go.
Up on that shoulder.
That's going to bring us to the close of this edition of the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans. For the veterans, we thank you for joining us. Hopefully, you'll join us again soon. Until then, please keep our warriors in your prayers, especially those in harm's way. God be with them and their families. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hoorah!